In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations time in Little Steven's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest this go-round is Danny Electro. He's the drummer in my band, The Woggles, and he wrote our latest digital single, Hole in My Heart. It's out on Wicked Cool Records, and it's also a recent coolest song of the world. It's from our upcoming album, Time Has Come, and that is due out May the 31st. We'll take a listen to a portion of the tune now, and afterwards I'll be joined by Dan for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Manfred, and it's time, dear listener, for our coolest conversations. Joining me is Danny Electro, drummer in The Woggles, the band that I'm the lead singer in, and he's responsible for writing our current coolest song in the world, Hole in My Heart, which is available as a digital single from Wicked Cool Records. It's going to be part of our new album, Time Has Come, that is due out May the 31st. How are you, Dan?
Doing fine. How are you?
Excellent. Very happy to be chatting with you. Now, I called you the Woggles drummer, also the author of our coolest song in the world, Hole in My Heart. So you wrote the tune. You must play more than drums, but drums are your first instrument?
Yes, certainly the first instrument.
And how
I'm
did you
a drummer that can play guitar, not a guitarist that can play drums.
Say again?
I said, I'm a drummer who can play guitar, not a guitarist that can play drums.
Well, how did you wind up playing the drums?
Evidently, I was known from an early age to be beating on things. And if music was playing, to certainly be beating on things. So I think to save the pots and pans around the household, my parents got me a drum kit for Christmas.
And your dad, he was a musician too, right? Or is he?
Yeah, he could play just about anything. But yeah, he had a band. His band started in high school with the FFA string band that they won a bunch of competitions with. And then by the time I came along, they had a band. It had steel guitar, had another guy playing fiddle and acoustic guitar. So eventually I became the drummer in that band in 1971.
Well, why did your dad choose you to be, why did he choose a son or have his son be the drummer in the band?
The drummer that they had at the time couldn't stay sober enough to play the third set. And I guess because I had shown an aptitude for beating on things, and they got the drum kit. I got the drum kit for Christmas Day 1970 and started playing. So eventually he would get with me and we would play, just the two of us would play the set of music that his band was doing at the time. There were three sets typically. And eventually, once I was up to speed, you know, after a few weeks, we played the first show.
How long did you play behind your dad?
It was for a few years up until we were playing at an Elks Lodge in Selma, Alabama. And my mom happened to be along with us. And a fight broke out. And one of their bar, you know, like a bar clearing brawl. And, you know, tables were overturned, things were thrown. And I was never told that is why we quit playing shows. But I think my mom told my dad that I couldn't, it wasn't healthy for me to be in that environment anymore. And I guess by this time, I was probably 15 years old and starting to be less interested in hanging out, you know, with my dad and his friends in their band, and more interested in my friends that were a year older than me were starting to get their driver's licenses. So I guess I never really questioned. I didn't find out why we quit playing until I must have been in my 30s, and my dad was talking one night and it came up, and that's how I discovered that we quit playing music.
Huh. Well, you were 15 about around the time that that ended. When you were in high school, did you play with in a band with any of your friends?
When I was in the sixth grade, there was a band of high school juniors whose drummer moved away. So they asked me to play drums. So I played drums with those guys until they graduated. But then there was nobody really in town that was to play with. You know, it's a small town, around 3,500, 4,000 people. There were some guys that owned instruments, but none of them could really play. And we used to get together in a couple of different houses and muck around, but all they wanted to play was Smoke on the Water. And they weren't interested in the songs that I had written. The first songs were actually just like written on a Kalamazoo organ that we had in the household. So eventually I grew disenchanted with playing Smoke on the Water. So I just basically put my drums in the closet and forgot about it for a while. Went off to college. And that's when I first started seeing, you know, this was around 1980. So I was starting to see original music bands. I guess the first original bands I was seeing would have been at Florida State University. I'd been to the University of Alabama for a year or two and saw, you know, cover bands were playing. And I came back from Florida State and I had gotten into my mind, well, maybe I was good enough to play drums with some college band. I just had to find one. And one summer I was home from college and I pulled my drums out of the closet and I had some friends over. We'd been out riding around drinking beer. And I put on some records and I asked them to give me an evaluation if I was good enough to play, because I had really no concept. I wanted an objective opinion if I was good enough to play in a band, and they said I was. So then I took my drums back to college, and that's how I got into playing again after a hiatus.
And now, which college are you at now? Are you in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, University of Alabama.
University of Alabama. Well, so I know that one of those bands you're playing with was Even Greenland, and they put out a 7-inch. At what point did you wind up playing with them? Because that was the first band you were in that actually put something out, right?
Yeah, that was the first college band. I was in a basement with three other guys, two guitar players and a keyboard player. We had a bass guitar, but the two guitar players didn't want to play it. And we were just playing cover songs. You know, this is the mid-80s, 1984, 1985. So we were just mucking around, and it was a Saturday afternoon, and I guess this guy named Will Kimbrough, who now is a pretty big fish up in Nashville, he had a band at the time called, I think they were called Ground Zero at that time. They eventually became Will and the Bushmen. He walked into the basement with a couple of other guys, one of whom was Rob Trucks, and we spent a few more hours with those guys sitting in, just playing whatever songs we all could figure out or we all knew. And then on the basis, I got to know Rob during that moment, and he asked me would I be interested in starting a band. I said, you know, if you're talking about playing original music, yes, I am very interested. I don't want to be in a cover band. He goes, no, I'm talking about original music. So we started look, you know, he I think he already had some guys in mind to play with us. And so that was a Even Greenland was a four piece. Tim Lee of the Windbreaker saw us playing in Jackson, Mississippi, and that's how we ended up putting out a single on his label. So yeah, it was happening pretty fast, you know.
Well, who wrote this? So they, Even Greenland puts out a 7-inch. Were what, either one of the songs on there one of your compositions?
Yeah, the one side was Rob Truck's composition and the other side was mine.
Okay, so
So,
by this time, you were not writing on the Kalamazoo organ anymore, right?
no, I was riding on a Hofner electric guitar that my uncle had brought back from Germany. He was in the army over there in the early 60s. And it was a Hofner guitar, three pickups, and about 17 switches on it. And I had dug that out of my dad's closet and took it back to college. I had melodies in my head, but I really couldn't play chords. And I sh got my dad to show me two or three chords.
Okay.
And then I would ask another guitar player. So the first song I wrote, my guitar skills were very rudimentary, but they were enough to convey a message, you know, to get the idea of the song across to the guitar player in the band. And
Yeah. What was the first song, this that Even Greenland song that you came up with? What was it called?
it was called The Four, and somebody has put it up on YouTube, which
Well,
was
all right.
shocking for me. You know, there I think there was only 500 copies pressed of that single. It was on Big Monkey Records, which is a Tim Lee's record label at the time.
So you're in Even Greenland for how long did Even Greenland last?
Oh, like most Tuscaloosa bands, a good 9 to 12 months. And then, you know, one guy graduated, yeah, a couple of guys graduated, and we got two other local musicians of other Tuscaloosa bands that were breaking up and formed a band called Ghost Ranch. And we never, I don't think we ever, we might have a song on a compilation or two. One from the local college radio station, I think, put out a compilation. And then Rob Trucks, who was in Even Greenland and Ghost Ranch with me, had Mustang Records. And I think we might have been on a compilation. But that was the band that I first played in Athens, Georgia. The first show was at the 40 Watt with the Kilkenny Cats. And that was a big moment, you know, because Athens, Georgia was the hot city at the time for music. And we had played with Rob Trucks was also booking some shows in Tuscaloosa, and he booked the Kilkenny Cats, and they crashed at our place. So I guess that's how we ended up opening for them at the 40 Watt in Athens, when it was 40 Watt was down on the low end, the far end of Broad Street, I guess the east end, right before you go down to Big Hill.
Kind of the doors there, all kind of reminiscent, not really saloon doors, but it had a very kind of saloony feel to it.
Yeah, it was high cotton for us at the time. Thought we were somebody. And there was, I have a CD, a recording of that on CD, and there was a video, but videos lost to the sands of time.
Well, so you were playing with these different bands in Tuscaloosa, and you're playing a lot of different kinds of bands too, but I think you were familiar really with like garage rock or 60s style garage rock, mainly through the Liars or the Cynics. So, I mean, you played in bands that had all sorts of influence. What drew you to garage rock?
You know, in the 60s, my mom was a teacher. And my mom and dad were typically asked to be the chaperones at whatever high school function was going on. So there were bands coming through. And I guess one of them would have been the Rock and Rebellion, I think, out of Birmingham. Mm-hmm. So I had Rock and Rebellion did I guess it was a cover, which I didn't know at the time, but Any Way the Wind Blows.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, playing that song over and over and over certainly planted a seed in my head. And then a guy named Mike Sansone had a radio show on the college radio at University of Alabama. I think it was called Primal Man Stinking Up the Garage. And he would play a lot of garage rock, and something about that resonated in me. And then this bar we were playing called the Chucker, that was in downtown Tuscaloosa, they would be playing Liars music on the sound system, because the Liars had already been to Tuscaloosa thanks to George Hadjidakis of Vinyl Solution Records. He was booking a lot of shows, booked the Replacements, the Liars.
And George's the Vinyl Solution was the record store in town.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was the indie record store that he's probably as responsible as anybody for where my musical taste and interest turned. Is he had this, I think by then I'd seen the Liars had played in town at this bar where I was bartending, and you know, it was sold out and they were on fire. And it was just kind of mind blowing to see a band playing this kind of primal version of rock and roll. And then one day Hadjidakis saw me and said I should be at his store that afternoon, because the Cynics were doing an in-store. So I was there and saw the Cynics. That's when they had the keyboard player. I think her name was might have been Becky. Mm-hmm. And saw the Cynics play in the record store. That was mind-blowing. And then I played in a bunch of different bands with this guy named Robert Huffman, who had recently purchased some Farfisa organs. This was in the early to mid 90s, now probably around 93, 94.
Yeah.
And Robert and I were hanging out at the Chucker, and I told him that I wanted us to start a new band. He could use his Farfisa's. And he goes, well, what do you got in mind? I said, music like the Cynics and the Liars and all the bands that influenced them. So I was living out of town. I was living on about a 45-minute drive out of town at the farm. I came back in town, and a couple of weeks later, Robert said he got the guys to form the band, and we were called the Irascibles. And
well, that's how I know you, because I know you first at the Irascibles, right? We met.
Right, that's how we met.
That's how we met.
The Irascibles had a show booked at the Chucker, and the owner of the Chucker, a former bandmate at the time, asked if the Woggles could play with us, and we said sure. So that's how I got to know you guys.
So you've been in the Woggles how long now?
I guess the first practices, I guess we handshook on me joining the Woggles sometime in the spring of 95.
Yeah.
And we started practicing. The first practices were in August of 95.
So what's your recollection of how you wound up spending nearly 30 years with me so far?
Oh, broken marriages and lost loves and another mile behind us, I guess. You know, there's certainly a lot of memories.
You mentioned, you know, we gave a handshake and you came over and started rehearsals. But initially, the idea was you were going to play guitar in the band.
Yeah.
Why was that?
Well, I think at the time, the Woggles were a four-piece, where you had been a five-piece. I guess at this point, Montague had left to go to college in Wilmington. So it was a Woggles, Irascibles show at the Chucker one night. And I had seen the Woggles at that point with probably three different drummers, at least three different drummers. So I had it in my mind to speak to you about joining the Woggles someday if the drummer seat ever came open. And we were talking that night at the Chucker, and you said, well, you can play guitar, can't you? And I said, yeah, I can play guitar. He goes, well, you can join now if you want to play guitar. If you want to wait for the drums to open up, then you'll have to wait until, I guess that would have been the fall of 95. So I thought about it, and then I told you that I think I'd be a better drummer than I would ever be a guitarist. So I'd just wait for the drums. At that point, Gentleman Josh was the drummer. And I guess he heard this, and he actually he called me on the phone and asked, would I be cool with joining on drums as soon as possible, with the caveat that he could sit in on drums on a few songs when the Woggles played Athens, Georgia. And I said, yeah, no problem. So that would have been sometime probably in the summer of 1995 when we had that conversation. So, yeah, I guess it was August is the first time when there was going to be enough time for us to practice together to really gel before playing shows. And the first
so
show.
The moment, I'm going
go ahead.
I'm sorry. No,
we're
going to say. The first show?
The first show was at the local 506 in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And that was October of 95. So we practiced, you know, a good 2 months before we played the first show, just on the weekends, of course.
Right. And did we play that show with the Insomniacs or not?
Yes, we did. We played with the Insomniacs. And then the following night was at the 40 Watt with the Insomniacs and Impala.
Right. So Insomniacs, of course, another favorite of ours here in the in the Underground Garage, featuring Bob Wojciechowski on guitar, who these days is playing in Palmyra Doran's Doppelgang.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So even that there at the outset, you were contributing songs. You'd written songs in the Irascibles, and you joined the Woggles, and some of those songs are on our first album together that you were playing drums on, Get Tough. Our coolest song in the world this week is a tune you wrote called Hole in My Heart. Let's talk about that some. Is any one person responsible for the hole?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You want to elaborate on that or take the fifth?
You know, I don't. They don't get satellite radio in Germany, do they?
No.
Oh, you know, Woggles were playing in Austria, and I met a girl from Munich, Germany, and fell in love pretty quickly. And as usual, you know, made a muck of it or whatever. You know, we lived on different continents. So eventually that came apart in a bad way. And but the, you know, the odd thing is, Hole in My Heart was written probably 10 years after the breakup, but somehow this breakup has stuck with me. You know, the ship can only take so many torpedoes before it's just not worth repairing anymore. So that's kind of where Hole in My Heart came from.
You mentioned writing it like 10 years after the breakup. Is it one that came to you quickly in a spurt of inspiration, or did it take shape over a longer period of time?
No, this one was one of those that fell out of my head within a few minutes. You know, our bandmate Graham Day says if he hasn't got the song pretty much done in 5 minutes, he discards it because it's never going to be as good as the ones that do fall out of your head. So I was just sitting in my apartment one late afternoon and was drinking a glass of red wine, and the inspiration hit, and I grabbed the guitar and started playing around with the chords. Of course, it was a blues progression that was in my head. And then the lyrics were just kind of fell out. Song was finished within 5 or 10 minutes. There wasn't a whole lot of you know, the only thing that were revised here and there was taking it from a shuffle beat, like a traditional blues song, into a straight four beat. And then the little production bits, you know, that we put on it in practice with the quiet third verse and all the usual tricks of the trade.
Well, you mentioned, you know, the two guitarists in the Woggles now, did that play into how you conceive the song at all or not?
With Hole in My Heart, not at first, because, you know, when the song is like that, falls out of your head, you're scrambling to get it all down and basically to catch it before it disappears from you out of your head. You know, I'm not a person that really sits down with a guitar and starts playing and writes the song. Songs come, you know, like a melody or something comes floating through your head, and I try to capture the melody on, like I used to carry a digital recording device for these moments. But when smartphones came along, then now you have a recording device, so you can just grab your phone and start humming into the phone or, you know, singing lyrics into the phone to try to catch them. Because if I pick up a guitar while that's going on, playing the guitar will will muddy what's going on in my head. So I have to catch it with the recording on the phone, and then figure out from there what I'm humming and make that into guitar chords.
You mentioned Graham Day, and he's one of the two guitarists in the Woggles now. And back in the 80s, he fronted the UK band The Prisoners. They've recently reformed and started doing some shows again. He also played at the Mighty Caesars alongside Billy Childish. He fronted other bands like the Solar Flares that we play here in the Underground Garage. And back in 2007, he released an album as Graham Day and the Jailers, and you were a part of that. You were a jailer. How did you wind up working with Graham as a jailer?
Well, you know, in the Woggles, and Graham had a band called the Solar Flares, which had the Prisoners bass player, Alan Crockford, was the bass player in the Solar Flares, and the drummer was Wolf Howard, who's played in the Dagger Men, played with Billy Childish and a lot of in the Buff Medways and other bands. The Woggles and the Solar Flares played together in Germany, and I guess we all hit it off and got along very well. And so I had the Solar Flares records, and I could, you know, put on a Solar Flares record, and it was like I knew where the song was going to go. It was the way Graham wrote was just phenomenal to my ears. And at some point, I had realized that it's like Johnny Barker had been in the a bass player in the Buff Medways, and Graham had played bass in the Buff Medways. But then at some point, I realized that Graham had been replaced with, I guess, Billy Childish's wife, Julie. So I knew that Graham Day wasn't writing songs and putting out music. Or I didn't, if he was, I didn't know about it. So I happened to be in the UK playing drums with the Cogburns from Atlanta, Georgia. The reason I was with the Cogburns is their drummer couldn't get a passport, couldn't find his birth certificate to get a passport in time. So they asked me to go. And I was in London hanging out after that tour was over with, and met up with Graham and his wife, Allie, on the one-year anniversary of their marriage, where the Woggles had been the band at the wedding party. So I asked Graham, you know, where are the Graham Day songs? What band you got going on? And he said he didn't have one, that he had written some songs. He called them bedroom songs. And he said he was thinking he was just going to record it all himself. And I said, well, you could do that, or you could, Patrick and I will record with you.
Patrick meaning?
Buzz Hagstrom, the bass player in the Woggles.
Yeah.
So, He thought about it for a day or two and then said, yeah, let's do it. And Patrick and I went over, I think it was it would have been early February of 2007, I think, would have been the recording. And he had just sent demos, and Patrick and I learned the songs on our own. Time that all three of us were together was in Ranscombe Studios there in Rochester on the banks of the Medway River. And that's how the Jailers took off.
And the project, the Jailers, is that still ongoing?
You know, Graham has many mistresses. So, you know, The Jailers put out a third record on Damaged Goods April of last year, I think, or, you know, time kind of runs together. But expected we were going to do some shows, but we didn't do shows. And the prisoners playing together again after such a long hiatus apart, I think maybe that momentum kind of took over Graham's time. That he, by then, Graham's traveling over here to the States to play with the Woggles a lot. So I think the Jailers just kind of got lost in the shuffle. We never really, you know, there was probably, there was 10 years or more between the second and third records. So, you know, I wouldn't say the Jailers are dead, but on another extended hiatus.
Now, you're also playing in a band in San Diego, The Allergic Reaction. They put out a debut single recently. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah. So Richard Ward, a.k.a. Richard Wigg, I guess I've known Richard since the earliest, probably 1995, Woggles played in Washington, D.C., and we all crashed at Richard and Glennis, his wife's apartment. I think they were actually out of town.
They were. That was, and I can't remember. I guess we had met them before, but it was like, hey, these nice people are letting us crash at their place, and they won't be there. It's like, okay, yeah.
That was, and then I guess we would see them when we would play the D.C. area, but
yeah,
at some point they moved to Atlanta, and that's when I really got to know Richard and Glennis. And a few years ago, they moved to San Diego. And Richard and I were, during the pandemic and the lockdown, we were doing FaceTiming each other once every week or two. And at some point, the drummer in that band decided he didn't want to do it anymore. And I told Richard I was gonna, as soon as the, you know, the quarantines were over with and things were back to normal, that I wanted to come to San Diego because I had an idea that maybe I would live there. Because at that point we were, had closed the bicycle shop. Basically, the pandemic gave us enough business to safely close the bike shop.
Right, and that was your, you were the proprietor, you and a partner
right,
in the bike shop right there in Tuscaloosa.
So after 10 years of bike shop, we got out of that, and Richard said, well, hey, if you're going to be out here, would you mind playing some drums? And I said, sure. So the pandemic giveth and taketh away and giveth again.
And this the single, that's what is this, on a French label?
Yeah, it's called Disc Rogue. Two songs on a 7-inch, and that came out fairly recently.
Yeah, and the Allergic Reaction, how would you describe them music-wise?
It's that kind of psychedelic tinge garage rock. That's what I guess would be a fair.
And either do either of those two songs, or the, did you write either of those two songs, or how did those?
No,
songs...
I haven't written any songs for Allergic Reaction. I guess any songs that I catch flying through my head will goes to the Woggles.
We appreciate that. Yeah, we're going to go out on your other contribution to our upcoming album. I'll talk about that track in a moment. But this new Woggles album comes out May the 31st, and we're going to do shows in June in the Southeast, go overseas to the UK and Denmark for several shows in August, and we'll tour with Southern Culture on the Skids in the Northeast in September. Well, like touring, how important are live shows to you?
You know, there was a time, you know, I never really thought about live shows being important or not important. It was just part of the whole thing. And I really liked the camaraderie of the travel and being on tour. That's when I joined the Woggles. That's what you and I talked about doing, was going on tour, because why I wanted to do that, I have no idea. But I guess I'm the only male in three generations of my family to not drive a truck at some point and have a commercial driver's license. So maybe the going on the road with the band was my traveling bug. But at some point, as I got older, the playing the show was probably the least favorite thing of the evening. And it was, when you're younger, getting to a bar at 5 or 6 o'clock, load in, you start to drink beer, and then you're drinking beer for several hours, and now at midnight or 1 in the morning, you got to go on stage and play drums, and you're just already worn out. But along came the pandemic and took all that away, and you start to realize how much you missed it. And now that I think one thing is the shows, a lot of the shows we're playing are earlier than they used to be. That's one bonus. Another bonus of the pandemic is a lot of the shows are earlier. And I've learned to live life on the road without drinking a 6-pack of beer or more every night. So playing the shows is actually, I guess I have a greater appreciation for it now than I did a few years ago.
So we're going to have a Coolest Conversations world premiere in a moment by taking a listen to this title track to the Woggles' upcoming album, Time Has Come. This tune is your other contribution to the new release. And Time Has Come, stylistically, is quite different from Hole in My Heart. You know, Hole in My Heart is filled with fuzzy and trashy guitars. Time Has Come has got this ringing 12-string. So the songs inhabit very distinct sonic soundscapes. First, can you tell me something about how you came up with Time Has Come?
I guess it was another one of those situations where the fiddly bit, the guitar melody was kind of floating through my head. And, it kind of was in the same ballpark as a song that came out on one of our singles a few years ago called, A Waste on the Young.
Yeah.
And that's probably the first time where I really heard two distinct guitar parts, and knowing that, I was writing it. This was after Graham and Shane are both in the band.
Take a moment to mention Shane, because we talked about Graham. So Shane Pringle, the other guitar player.
Right. So they have very different sounding guitar tones. And when I was writing this song, I already had in my mind which guitar was going to be doing what. And it was just, I can't control what songs come around on the mental carousel. They just come by and you try to catch them as they come by. And that one had to be, it was, the time has come, that's just the way it's sounded. It was, when I started making little demos of it in my kitchen, was it Neil Diamond, Solitary Man?
Yeah. Yeah.
That song was definitely floating around, and this idea that the broken heart of 10 years ago, and then the pandemic, and, you know, being 63 years old in a college town kind of made me a solitary man. So time has come. The lyrics of that song are really just about just kind of becoming disillusioned with life and realizing that a lot of the choices you maybe once had were no longer available as choices anymore. But that also, fewer choices means it's easier to make decisions. There's not seven doors, it's just two doors. Pick one.
That's right, Coke or Pepsi.
Right.
Dan, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you for having me, Manfred.
Man, we're going to take a listen and make a, we're going to do a Coolest Conversations premiere by playing the title track to the Woggles new album, Time Has Come. Comes out May the 31st on Wicked Cool Records. So, Time Has Come and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Time Has Come. That's the title song to my band The Woggles' new album. It's due out May the 31st on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to our drummer, Dan Electro, for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Boston's Shanghailos, they've got a new single out on Rumbar Records. It's called Op Operator. And joining me next time around to tell us all about it is band member Dan Kopko. He's my guest for our next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.